WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer. Gay conversion therapy is having its day in court. Days, really. We're talking about the widely dismissed form of counseling that helps men overcome unwanted same-sex attractions. This week, two federal judges have issued really contradictory rulings on whether to allow the new California law banning gay conversion therapies for minors. Meanwhile, in New Jersey, four gay men who tried the therapy have filed a lawsuit against a prominent counseling group, charging it with deceptive practices. To explain the legal issues and why the First Amendment might be on the side of these rogue therapists is NYU constitutional law professor, technically the Chief Justice Earl Warren Professor of Constitutional Law at NYU, Kenji Yoshino. Welcome back to WNYC, Kenji.
Thanks, Mike. Great to be here.
First of all, could you define, maybe it elevates it a little bit to call it gay conversion therapy. How would you describe what the practice is?
Right. So it's a therapy that attempts to change an individual's sexual orientation from gay to straight.
Uh-huh. And when we say widely discredited, what's the evidence of that?
Every major psychological or psychiatric association in the United States has said that this kind of therapy is ineffective.
And are the therapists licensed?
Some are and some aren't, but even the licensed ones are often licensed for other psychoanalytic or psychotherapeutic functions and not this in particular.
So if they're not licensed, that's one legal remedy unavailable. You can't go after their licenses if the people who sometimes subject their children to the therapy don't care if people are licensed.
That's exactly right. And in fact, the California statute that you're mentioning only applies to licensed therapists because the sanctions are only to the are meted out by the licensing body. So if you're unlicensed, then you're beyond the purview of the statute.
Okay, let's talk about the California law. What does it say and what do these two courts say about it?
Okay, so the California law was just passed. I think it was signed into law on September 30th of this year. It says that you cannot engage in sexual orientation change efforts, which is essentially conversion therapy, and I'll put conversion therapy in scare quotes there, with minors. And if you do that, if you engage in the practice of sexual orientation conversion efforts, then a licensing body can sanction you for that.
Right. And so I asked the question, but we'll get to what the courts of appeals say about this. But if, as you say, most of this therapy is done outside the rules of licensing, is this just window dressing or a statement that's not going to have, even if the law is passed and enacted, that it actually won't have a big impact, do you reckon, on the actual practicing of gay therapy?
I think it's important, Mike, and you make a really good point, but it's important in a couple of ways. One is that this is the first law of its kind in the nation, so we could actually see a wave of laws that are similar to this. So it's trying to establish a bulkhead, so to speak. And the other one is, you know, as I mentioned before, many of these therapists are licensed. It's just that they're not licensed for this particular practice. And so they could actually feel some heat if they have, say, a side practice in this area and they practice that. They could be sanctioned by the licensing body.
What are the California courts saying about the law?
It's really interesting. Just Monday and Tuesday, we had two courts go in exactly opposite directions. So the first court said this is a violation of the First Amendment. So I should be really clear here and precise in saying that both of these were what are known as preliminary injunctions, which were just blocking the law from going into effect before a full hearing on the merits can be had. And so the first court said, I'm going to issue the preliminary injunction. I'm going to block the law because I believe that there's a strong case to be made here that this violates the First Amendment's free speech clause. The other court went exactly the opposite way.
Okay, so what's the argument with why it would violate free speech?
Right. So the argument for why it would violate free speech is very similar to the, you may not like this, but our First Amendment tradition allows the Nazis to march in Skokie.
Right.
And so if this is expressive conduct, then you have to allow it even if you disagree with it, right?
Right. So one party seeks a therapy. I want this therapy. One party says, I can give you this therapy. Who's the government to get in the way? Who's the government to get in the way of the therapist who says, I can help you?
Right. And then the answer to that is what the other court said. And what the second court said is to say, give me a break. This is not speech. This is conduct, right? And so we've had a very, very long tradition of regulating the medical profession. And, you know, if somebody in the medical profession commits malpractice, even if that's through some combination of speech and conduct, the state can regulate that.
Okay. Medical profession might be a procedure. It might be invasive. It seems a little different from therapy. I mean, maybe we even need to take a step back. There are some techniques, including stripping someone naked in front of a counselor, beating effigies of their mother, being told there are no change, that their change in sexual feelings were their own fault. So perhaps there's some physical component of it, but therapy is talk therapy. And so when the medicinal practice is talking and trying to convince someone, do we have to take that into account in evaluating the First Amendment claims?
Exactly. You put your finger on it, which is to say that the plaintiffs who are alleging the First Amendment are trying to blur the line between speech and conduct, saying, okay, you can regulate conduct with respect to medical conduct. But the talking cure, which is what psychoanalysis and psychotherapy is, kind of bridges a gap in between speech and conduct. And so this is actually more along the lines of expressive conduct.
Right. Especially if it's unlicensed. I don't want to take a side here, but it does seem to be, there does seem to be a sort of case where, well, we could call it a therapy, but I'm just a guy who's going to convince you of something. You want to be convinced, or your dad wants to convince you. Like the government stepping up in the way of that does seem to bring up some issues, except...
But let's be really clear, Mike, that that's not what the California statute does, right? So as the second judge pointed out, there is no chilling effect with respect to speech because this only applies to licensing organizations.
Right.
So that if you're an unlicensed individual, and as we've discussed, there are many of those, say a religious organization that doesn't have a license to do this but wants to convert people or attempt to convert people's sexual orientation, if you are a licensed official in another state, right, then you can always be recommended by someone in California to go to one of these institutions.
Our number is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Do you have an experience with this kind of therapy? Does a family member that you know of, anyone you know of who's gone through this kind of, we'll put it in scare quotes, therapy? Our number again, 212-433-9692. If you have thoughts on the California law or the New Jersey legal suit, which we're going to get to in a second, in your expert legal opinion, which of these two judges do you think has the better argument and who will win the day? Ken, that's to you. You're the legal expert.
I thought we were going to have someone call in on that issue, Mike. Let me just start out with my baselines here, which is to say I'm very pro-gay. I think that these therapies don't work. You know, I agree with every major medical association in the United States that says this doesn't work. On the other hand, I'm a free speech practically absolutist. So I do think that the Nazis should be able to march in Skokie. I think the Supreme Court got the Westboro Baptist Church case right when they said that they could picket the
military funerals.
Yeah. Exactly. So this is actually a balance of interest. I think it's kind of a false conflict, though, because I don't see that anybody's speech rights are being violated. If any one of these therapists wants to recommend this therapy, they're free to welcome. They're welcome to actually recommend that therapy. What they can't do is engage in the conduct of the therapy itself.
Right. Do you think that if the argument you made forth is the one adopted and this law goes into effect, do you think that there will be a real practical effect, or do you think that there'll just be ways around it where church groups or other people can have their members engage in this therapy without, you know, being explicit about what they call the therapy?
I think there will be an explicit effect because I think that many of the individuals who engage in this therapy hold themselves out as people who have been licensed by various boards. So that's part of the credibility that they're giving to that practice, even if the licensing has to do with a separate part of their practice. So I do think that it's a seriously consequential thing. I also think, Mike, that the fact that this is applied to minors and that it protects minors is really, really crucial. We're talking about an extraordinary vulnerable population. It used to be back in the day that parents would routinely send their children off to these therapeutic practices, again, therapy in scare quotes, and then that these kids would be suicidal or would commit suicide or would be scarred for life by the emotional experience that they had in these therapies. So let people become adults and then decide whether they want to sign up for this therapy or not. The law does not prohibit that in California.
Although I do want to point out that the court that originally had the First Amendment issue did look at the evidence of an increase in suicide and questioned it.
That's right. Yeah. So the first court said that you don't have deep enough studies with respect to minors and suicide rates. But we do have a considerable amount of data about how gay teen suicide rates are much higher, right? And so
right.
I think that the causation issues, it's not going to be that hard to connect the dots. I think that one of the things that's preventing us from doing that is simply the privacy of the physician-patient relationship.
Let's talk about the New Jersey case. This is not a state law. This is a lawsuit. The Southern Poverty Law Center has filed a civil suit against JONA, which stands for Jews Offering New Alternatives for Healing. It's charging the counseling group with deceptive practices under the state's Consumer Fraud Act. What's the legal argument here?
So the legal argument here is really interesting because New Jersey, unlike California, doesn't have a law that makes this practice illegal. But even in the absence of that, New Jersey does have a Consumer Fraud Prevention Act. And so the lawsuit says this is consumer fraud because you're holding out to the public that you can actually change people from being gay to being straight, whereas every medical association has said that that's impossible, so that's a form of fraud. You're taking thousands of dollars away from your patients, promising them something that you can't deliver on.
Well, isn't every psychic who says he could commune with the dead violating that also?
Possibly, but I don't think that we have the same degree of harm. I could be wrong about that. I'm willing to entertain that I'm wrong about that. But again, when we go back to the harm that these conversion therapies inflict on the individuals who are subjected to them, I think that we have a much stronger case here.
Does therapy, any kind of therapy, ones recognized by respectable organizations actually have a promise attached to it like this form of therapy does?
Yeah, what's interesting is that the JONA organization does, according to the complaint, so these are allegations made in the complaint, so I don't want to say that these are actual statements of fact, but the complaint alleges that they hold themselves out as being able to change individual sexual orientation. So there is that promise made. What the organization then does once you sign up for it is that it softens or it backpedals a little bit on, again, allegedly it backpedals a little bit on what it can actually offer. So it doesn't say we can convert you totally. It just says that we can make your same-sex desires go down or increase your cross-sex desires or what have you.
Do you think either of these strategies is preferable to the other, suing existing organizations versus blanket bans?
I would prefer the blanket ban in the sense that a legislature in California actually considered this issue, took evidence on both sides, and the intent of the legislation is directly targeted at this particular form of abuse. Whereas a consumer fraud statute is obviously extraordinarily broad, and so it's unclear whether or not the intent was to cover this. All of that said, you know, I think that the suit is a very well-crafted suit. They basically picked a state in which the consumer fraud statute did not require intent to defraud. So a lot of these consumer fraud statutes say that there has to be an intent to defraud. That intent requirement is absent in New Jersey. They also picked a statute that has a very long statute of limitations, 6 years. Oftentimes with abuses of this kind, you don't find out because you're so ashamed or because you're still trying to fool yourself that the therapy has worked.
Or because you're a young minor who's sort of under the thumb of a parent.
Exactly, and hasn't been emancipated yet.
If you get thrown into this 13 and you might not realize or be able to do anything about it till 18 and then the statute of limitations is up.
Exactly. So they picked their state very wisely and I think that's why they're going in New Jersey.
We have a quick call, I hope, from Josh from Queens. You went through JONA, Josh? Hello, Josh? I don't know. You know, we don't have enough time. I'm sorry. He wasn't there. Okay, so the last question is, if we could quickly get to it. When laws are passed in California, they often have an effect on the rest of the country, not just because California is the biggest state, but because companies have to tailor their products to the fact that, you know, it's this huge market. If the California law passes, will it be more than just a lodestar, a signal? Will, for instance, national advertising or Google searches for this sort of thing have to change because of what California does?
That is unclear, but the second judge in the decision yesterday believed that the best reading of the statute meant that internet communications or trans-state communications would not be affected by the statute.
All right. Kenji Yoshino is the Chief Justice. Earl Warren, so he's not the Chief Justice, but he's the Chief Justice Earl Warren Professor. I hope I said that right and with the proper commas. Chief Justice Earl Warren Professor of Constitutional Law at NYU. Thank you very much.
Great to be with you, Mike.